And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. And the only thing I can say today, folks, is that the patients are indeed running the asylum. I mean, what else can you say? The patients are running the asylum. We got some interesting things to talk about. And because it's Friday, kind of a free-for-all day for us, I want to get your calls in early, so I encourage you to go ahead and get on the line because I want to hear what you have to say. I'm going to introduce a couple of topics that I just cannot help but introduce because they scream at me to be talked about. But I want to hear what you're thinking today. With all the stuff that's going on this week, and we haven't been able to cover even half of all the topics that could be raised about all of this. But today, I really want to focus on something that I've been thinking about. I kind of thought about it throughout the evening and woke up this morning thinking about it, too. And it has to do with this attitude of apology and repentance that the left and Antifa are demanding of, I guess, anybody who dares to step out of line. This does seem to be primarily directed at Americans of European descent, although I have no doubt that under the right circumstances, they would be demanding an apology from me, and there would be none forthcoming. But that's another matter. You know, I tried to figure out why Drew Brees apologized. I mean, look, I understand the politics of it, but I was trying to figure out, well, what did he say that he thought, well, this is something he really needs to apologize for? And I could not find anything. I couldn't find anything. And he basically had said something to the effect that, he was very proud of, here it is right here. Here's what he said. Let me just tell what I see, what I feel when the national anthem is played. And when I look at the flag of the United States, I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army, one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think. And in many cases, that brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed. Now, that's what he said. Look, I have no doubt that many of you listening are smarter than I am, and you can plumb the depths of the evil that is spoken there and explain to the rest of us why that absolutely demands an apology. And apparently, people went ballistic. According to Breitbart News, he received an avalanche of criticism from teammates, a sports mainstream media, LeBron James, one of the dumbest men in the NBA, by the way. Yeah, he's a very good basketball player, very smart basketball player, might even be a very good businessman, but a really, really dumb person. And no, I'm serious. And this proves it. Is it LeBron James? How dare you insult us like that? What did he say that was wrong? Here's where it gets even worse. He apologizes. Quote, this is part of his apology. In an attempt to talk about respect, unity, and solidarity centered around the American flag and the national anthem, I made comments that were insensitive and completely missed the mark on the issues we are facing right now as a country. They lacked awareness and any type of compassion or empathy. Instead, those words became divisive and hurtful and misled people into believing that I am somehow the enemy. This could not be further from the truth and is not an accurate reflection of my heart or my character. Wait a minute. Those words have become divisive, but they weren't divisive and hurtful, but they weren't hurtful. The only person those words could hurt is somebody who is literally insane and thinks that complimenting your father, who was he talked about? Your grandfathers for their courage in beating back Nazism is somehow an insult to somebody. The only person that's an only people it's an insult to is Nazis. Are these people upset? Are they Nazis? I mean, I'm just asking. Because he said they risked their lives to protect our country, to make our country and this world a better place. Ooh, now that, ooh, isn't that, now that's really insulting, isn't it? Well, the only person that should insult would be Hitler. You know what I mean? And he has to apologize for that. We have really gone down the rabbit hole. I'm serious. This does not, I said the patients are running the asylum. Because to read what Drew Brees said and to get angry over that, to me says you are certifiably mentally insane. And I don't think I'm exaggerating at all. Something is wrong, so wrong with your thinking that you have completely lost touch with reality. And I'm probably doing a disservice to people who have mental illness because I think most people who have mental illness would be smarter than that. So this is a kind of moral insanity. And so then he goes on to apologize. And I don't know Drew Brees. I'm not a fan of Drew Brees. Haven't followed his career. I mean, I know the name. But, you know, if you started asking me details about Drew Brees, I couldn't answer them for you. I'd have to do research, look it up. But I just know he's a big name in football. But really? Really, folks? You apologize for complimenting your grandfathers for fighting Nazism in World War II? And that's what the flag represents for you? What in the world is going on in our country? Well, that's the first one. And by the way, I want to try to get to your calls in the very next segment. The number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. But the other one is this restaurant. A restaurant out of the impulse of decency. This restaurant in Philadelphia. What is it? Bruno, Di Bruno Brothers. You know, they decided that they wanted to give some things to the police officers to encourage the police officers and so forth. And I mean, I've bought police officers meals. Sometimes I try to do it anonymously if I'm able to do that, because I'm not trying to call attention to myself, because I just want to encourage them and let them know that they're appreciated and that they're those of us out here who respect them and understand the difficult and dangerous job they do to serve and protect the rest of us. No big deal. I'm not looking for a trophy for that. This restaurant does something. No big deal. Just trying to be nice to these cops who are out there in a very in more intensely dangerous situation than now. Well, as a result of what they did for the police officers, they caught a lot of flack. And they apologized. They apologized. Well, just think on what's going on here for a moment, and we'll be back.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
What has been the cost of the coronavirus and the subsequent lockdown? We usually hear pundits talking about the lives lost and the jobs lost, but there is one way to understand how much has been lost. Christopher Roach reminds us in his article, Life is Risky, by providing a few responses to the argument that everything must be done to save just one life. He reminds us that we do not save every life now because it would be destructive. The moment you get into a car, you are taking a risk. He also adds that trying to save lives from one particular threat may increase the risk from others. We may use up resources that could be deployed against other risks. Currently, we worry about the coronavirus and generally ignore the 83,000 who die of diabetes or the 67,000 who die of drug overdoses. He suggests that one way to evaluate the cost-benefit of the national lockdown is to start with 20 million Americans who have lost their jobs, although the latest number is probably around 40 million. Multiply that by the average income of $50,000 a year, and you get an economic loss of $1 trillion. Add to that $2 trillion in stimulus bills, though the final total could be three times that, then add the loss of paper wealth in the form of retirement accounts, and he comes up with a loss in excess of $5 trillion, though I suspect the amount is probably twice that. He then applies these very low estimates to the assumption that the lockdown saved 100,000 lives. That would mean the government's actions are five times higher than the benefit. If you assume it just saved 10,000 lives, then it is 50 times higher. As you can see, the cost-benefit ratio is quite high. This cost shouldn't be ignored when debating the lockdown and the reopening of the economy. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For more information about issues covered on Viewpoints, visit pointofview.net. Pointofview.net.
Now some good news from American Family Radio. For years, scientists and archaeologists have made discoveries consistent with claims in the Bible. In 1961, an archaeological dig revealed evidence of Pontius Pilate. In 1993, and again in 2019, evidence was found to support the existence of King David. In 2018, a Rockefeller University genetic study found that all human life descended from one genetic pair. Archaeologists have been able to corroborate elements of the New Testament story of Jesus, and first century historians Tacitus and Josephus referred to Jesus in their writings. The dramatic gospel accounts of Jesus' horrible suffering, crucifixion, and resurrection from death still stand up against expert scrutiny. In light of historic confirmations, many are finding it harder to doubt Jesus' claims, and people honestly searching for truth are coming to believe in Jesus. For more information, ask a Christian or read the Bible, an encouragement from the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here. Hillary Clinton is not out of the woods yet. More voter fraud connected the vote by mail. Coronavirus shows us how clean our air actually is. The New York Times faces a revolt. Young black Americans are Joe Biden's worst electoral nightmare. Twitter pulls down one of President Trump's posts. And the May jobs report is the best one ever. Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Yeah, there is good news, folks. Jobs are coming back, and we'll talk about that in coming weeks. By the way, I'm going to be at Andrew Womack's Truth and Liberty Conference this weekend. I'll be speaking there tomorrow morning. It's going to be live streamed on his website. I think we're going to be showing it in a couple places on mine as well. So if you are anywhere in the area and you want to come, come on. We'd love to see you. And if you want to watch it live streamed, you can go to Andrew Womack Ministries website, and I'm pretty sure you'll be able to watch it on standamerica.us website as well. Look, so this DeBruno's Brothers gives police officers a free lunch, and so many apparently woke people, woke. Yeah, I'll wake you all right. You know, this is woke people got so up in arms that they had to apologize, and here's what they said. By now, you may be aware of a situation this past Monday at our Chestnut Street location involving the offer of complimentary lunch to Philadelphia police officers. The decision was made in haste, after a night of destruction and looting. It was insensitive, and we sincerely apologize. The sign was removed, and the policy is revoked. They went on to say that, you know, we stand in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, blah, 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 blah. So they're going to give four charities donations now. They're going to offer racial justice training for all management-level employees, and they're going to coordinate a meeting between employees and management in order to understand, not be understood. Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, a member of Parliament of Canada actually has bought into all this garbage, and has said that they're gonna open up Canada as a country of refugees for oppressed minorities in America. Yes, you can if you need to escape America, you can go to Canada. Oh, I tell you, isn't it wonderful to know you've got some place to escape to? I mean, really? You know, Canada wouldn't let me in because of my position. I didn't get turned down to go to Canada. I haven't been to Canada in a while anyway. But do you know my position on homosexuality, my biblical position on homosexuality, that it's sin in the sight of God, and that God condemns the practice and the behavior, and that it is, there's nothing righteous or good or normal or wholesome or commendatory about it? They'd arrest me in Canada. But they want to offer a place of refuge for the poor, oppressed minorities of America. Well, you know, they can keep their place of refuge. Thank you very much. I'm not going anywhere. So, because while there are many things about my country that I want to see improved and changed, I love America, and I'm not going anywhere, and I'm going to stay here and fight not to destroy my country, not to denigrate my flag, not to disrespect my national anthem, but I'm going to stay here and try to make sure that the values of my country represent the highest ideals that those symbols represent. Okay? Let's get to your calls. Otherwise, I could just go off on that one for a moment, because here again, I've said this whole kneeling for the flag and national anthem has nothing to do with police brutality. It has to do with an inherent hatred of America. And when people like LeBron James, for all practical purposes, a billionaire who's experienced the very best he could ever experience in life, and only because he lives in the United States of America, doesn't have the sense to respect that flag and that anthem and the system that made his life possible, that's why I say he's one of the dumbest people on the planet. You've got to be. Okay, let's hear again. Let me not launch there. Let's get to your calls. Let's go to Amy in Louisiana. Amy, welcome.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am blessed in spite of it all, Amy, and I know you are too.
I am, and I am from the great state of Louisiana, and I am a mother of a Marine, of an Army sergeant,
all right,
and a police officer. And
great.
I stand for the flag, but I kneel for the cross.
Amen.
But my point about Drew Brees is, you know, Bishop, we come to a time in our country where if you say something that you believe in, and you hold it to be true, why say it? If you sit there and you say it, and then you apologize for what you believe in, then you're giving in. You're compromising your beliefs. Why do that?
Well, Amy, you're being very nice. It's cowardly, is what it is.
It
is cowardly.
It is cowardly. And I'm here to tell you that I've given up NFL because of what they sitting down for that flag.
Yeah.
When they all are billionaires and millionaires, and they make money, and they have the freedom to do that.
Yep. Amy, I could not agree with you more. It is really a sad situation when the people who most benefit from the wonderful country we have can express that kind of bitterness and hatred to their own country. Look, I'm pro-life. I don't like the fact that the Supreme Court declared Roe v. Wade. I don't like that. But I'm going to continue to fight that, because I don't believe that that represents the very best of America. I believe it represents one of the areas in which we simply have gone wrong. But the country has been too much of a blessing to too many people for me to, as they say, throw out the baby with the bathwater, forgive the pun, which is what the abortion industry does. So I just continue to fight against it. I don't denigrate all the people who have fought and bled and died and sacrificed for the freedom that we enjoy, for me to oppose abortion by denigrating the very institutions that make my freedom possible, that secure my freedom. So Amy, you're right. Colin Kaepernick, as far as I'm concerned, is a supreme villain, probably really a very confused young man, but a supreme villain who's done nothing but introduce hatred and bitterness and division in our country. And Drew Brees, who I didn't know well anyway, I have no respect for now because he denigrated. You know, it reminds me of what Obama did. Remember when Obama started talking about his grandmother who happened to be white and said that, well, you're like typical white people. And people say he threw his own grandmother under the bus. Well, Drew Brees threw his own grandfathers under the bus in order to satisfy a bunch of rabble rousers. So thank you for the call, Amy. Let's get to Joey in Kentucky. Joey, welcome.
Hey, Bishop, it's good to speak to you.
Thank you. Good to hear from you.
As far as the apologies go, Jesus told us there'd be a time when what's good is bad and bad is good. They're just trying to redefine for us what is good and what is bad. I have listened for days to people jump around what really happened. We fought a war and this country became desegregated through those battles and that blood, and then we allowed it to segregate itself through the churches, through colleges, through other institutions. They need to be defunded. But if we're all together, we're all together. If we're not, we're not. You can't have discrimination if you're all one group.
We've Joey, become two you, groups. You just made a very critical point because you're right. Our country has fought to break down the barriers between people of different skin colors and races. And now we've got the left convincing us to voluntarily resegregate, to voluntarily make it us against them. And we've had colleges where they have to have a separate black graduation. They have to have a separate black dorm and a separate this and a separate that. And the whole point of the civil rights movement was to remind us that we're all human beings, that God loves us all, and that we have to learn to get along with one another and not allow ourselves to be divided by the superficiality of our outward appearance. And instead, the left has got us going in exactly the opposite direction. And it's a travesty. Let's see. I've got time for one more. Okay, let's try to get one more in. If I have to cut you short, I'll bring you right back. Let's go to, you've been very patient. Let's go to Bob in Ohio. Bob, welcome.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for taking my call, sir. And I thank for all the people who just talked before me. They're hitting the nail right on the head. And I think it's time that we...
Bob, are you going in and out on me? Okay. Hey, Bob, do me a favor. Maybe hang up, call back, because I'd love to hear the rest of your remarks. I know you're a veteran concerned about the nation, but you're going in and out on us, Bob, and we're about to hit our next break. You know, the ideas that people are accepting as reality are so far from truth. Now, I think I hit on this yesterday, but the reality is, and Heather McDonald's book talks about it, I've said the Bureau of Justice statistics bear it out, the reality is that an infinitesimal percentage of people who interact with police officers end up losing their lives as a result of that interaction, a very infinitesimal percentage. But they're trying to convince us that the country needs to be torn apart because there's an epidemic of police violence against young black men and against people in general. And it's just not so. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Occasionally, one comes across a story that speaks so loudly. There are as many stories as there are people, but they don't all come to the public's notice. One did recently. I'll let the person tell it in his own words. Having suffered a traumatic experience in childhood, he says, I've always had an abhorrence of funerals and dead people. When my dad died, I flew back east for the services. As I viewed his cold, lifeless body in the casket, I felt nothing. That inanimate figure bore no relationship to the pop who had always been so happy-go-lucky and full of life. But his strengths were also his weaknesses. His carefree, devil-may-care attitude made life a constant struggle for Mom. Pop was a traveling salesman, but he was much better at traveling than he was at selling. In death, as in life, he left stacks of unpaid bills. When the moment came to close the casket, my heart dropped as I saw Mom lean over and kiss him. Surely she didn't expect me to do that. Then I heard her whisper in his ear, as she had done countless times before when he had left for trips, "Bye, Pops. I'll be seeing you." She was sending him off on his final journey with a promise that she would join him. The writer concluded with these words, "That gesture was a lifetime of education for me. It told me more about mother's love for dad than anything I had witnessed in all my years at home. I would not have missed it for the world." You know, there are a lot of folks in this old world who carry signs and shout slogans of love. They get the headlines. And many times, few of them know very little about what they shout. There are others who practice day in and day out what the signs and shouts say. Love causes a person to do many things, nearly all good. Perhaps those who wish to have trial marriages could learn something from the mother and wife mentioned above. Seems as though many of our modern folk have forgotten the far better, far worse in the marriage vows. We've made a terrible mistake in judgment in our country. It is either the elite of society or the rags of the radicals who get the spotlight when love and marriage are mentioned. Perhaps it would help a little to shine a light on people like Mom. For it's that type of person who keeps our country together. Those who stick it out through thick and thin. Those who take seriously the vows they take. Those who go on living and loving day in and day out without anybody shouting any hoorays for them. Yes, it is the people whose love is genuine enough to carry them over the tough parts that we're indebted to. You know, love is a four-letter word, and it covers a multitude of sins and shortcomings.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. We had Bob on and had a little bit of difficulty with him. So, Bob, I believe we've got you back. So, Bob, you there? Bob, there you are.
Yeah.
Bob, you with me? There you go.
I'm sorry, sir.
That's okay.
But listen, the people was ahead of me here. They hit the nail right on the head. But let me say this. The brothers of the communities they live in, they left their wives with children, and the poor ladies had to raise these children in the ghettos. And I know what I'm talking about because I grew up in a ghetto. And I had a mother that scrubbed floors and cooked for Jewish family and kept us alive and going. And I tell you, I love God, and God is my God. And the thing of it is,
yeah, Bob. Okay. Well, listen, you made a very powerful point there. We appreciate the call. Tried to get you back, but I guess you're having still a little bit of a problem. But let me add this. Nobody wants to talk about the fact that the chaos that is happening in these inner cities, right? We used to call them ghettos. Now they're referred to them as inner cities, but everybody understands the educational dysfunction, the family breakdown, the gangs, the drugs, the violence, the drive-by shootings, all the stuff that's going on, the primary root of that is the breakdown of the family. And nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about these men who are abandoning their children and leaving them to fend for themselves and having to figure out where their place in life is and having that place defined for them by some murderous gang. We can't talk about that. See, look, remember that those of you who were listening yesterday, the last caller I had got a dig in when I brought up all the young black men who die across this country in inner cities across the country. Says, you see what you just did? I said, what? You just gave permission to the cops to kill black men. You know, that stuff will get you exasperated, folks. And one of the things I've said is you can't have a rational discussion with people who talk like that because reality just doesn't matter. So thanks for the call, Bob. We appreciate it. Let's see. Some of you have been waiting for a while, too. Let's go to George in Missouri. George, welcome.
Hey, Mr. Bishop. How you doing today?
Doing great, George. How about you?
All right. Hey, I'm not apologizing. My daddy fought in World War II. He died in 13. He was a combat marine in Attu and Tiska, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Iwo Jima. All my cousins that are my age were in Vietnam. I'm Vietnam era.
Yeah, so
and
am I.
Their kids were all their kids have been in since 9/11 started. And my uncle's a Congressional Medal of Honor winner.
Wow.
He saved his fire team. He got shot 37 times and almost cut in half with a bayonet and lived in Korea.
Goodness.
Man. No, I'm not apologizing. And they were policemen, and they were good policemen, and in the service. And I'm not apologizing. And we didn't have anything when we were growing up, but we went out, got jobs, worked hard, my whole family. You know, are there some bad ones? I'm sure there are in everybody's race. But that doesn't mean that we all have to fight and loot. And those people that are looters, those people are chickens. And I'm not apologizing.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame you.
That's wrong. I have
George, you've got nothing to apologize for. You've got a family that has served this country honorably. And there's no reason in the world why telling that story should require an apology any more than Drew Brees commending his grandfather should require an apology. It is utterly ridiculous. But it just goes to show again, let me add, thanks for the call, George. We do appreciate it. I'm going to get some other calls in here. But look, you know what it reminds me of this, folks. We don't have a totalitarian government in spite of what people say about President Trump. But we do have a totalitarian culture. And by that, I mean that the left has clamped down on people so hard that they will threaten their careers, their businesses, their livelihood, their reputations. If you dare contradict the orthodoxy that the liberal tells you you're supposed to think and the way you're supposed to talk, you dare contradict that. And if they can destroy you as a person, they will. And that's what totalitarianism does. That power is usually in the hands of the government. But now we've got a bunch of liberals in control of so much of the media and the institutions of our culture that they can act like little fiefdoms of their own and punish people who don't go along, who don't toe the line. So it's going to take some courage to stand up against this stuff and ultimately reverse it. Okay, let's go to Richard in West Virginia. Richard, welcome.
Thanks for taking me on. I am an Air Force veteran, Vietnam era veteran. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for yours.
I read the article this morning on Drew Brees' apology. I was righteously angry and very saddened. It just tore me up. The comment I guess I'd really like to touch on earlier on AFR, I had heard maybe even a year or so ago that in order to get diversity, and, the liberals wanted inclusiveness, diversity and inclusiveness.
Yeah. Yeah.
They went through that police department and lowered the qualifications and took a bunch of people that should have never been a police officer to get that inclusiveness and diversity. And I think they had a Muslim lady that was involved in a bad shooting recently. That created a lot of chaos. But they have reaped what they have sown. Mm-hmm. And look at the mess that they've created for this country just because of their decisions that, you know, we're gonna do what we want to do, and it's not right. It just breaks my heart, and I just couldn't agree any more with everything you've said. You're 1,000% on. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you too, Richard. Yeah, you know, when you read what Drew Brees said, and then you hear an apology, it really is. It's enough to make you angry, because he simply didn't say anything wrong. He didn't even refer in any way to the people who weren't standing for the flag. He simply was expressing the way he feels about the flag. How is that offensive? But apparently, for some, that was the height of insult. And Drew Brees buckled, bowed, and apologized. Well, thank you. I'm not apologizing. And as far as I'm concerned, no patriot who loves this country and stands for that flag and honors our national anthem should ever apologize to anybody. Let's go to Tracy in Kentucky. Tracy, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for my call, and thank you for your show.
Thank you. Two things.
First and foremost, I pray daily that God would bring out the truth and no media or any other evil force could hold it back. And I pray that Christians would have the boldness to speak it. We don't have boldness, and we need boldness. But second of all, with Mr. Floyd's death, the first thing that happens is we scream racism. And we know racism is real. But why is that the first thing that always comes to everybody's mind? Why don't we think of hatred? Why don't we think of murder? Why don't we think of evil? If it was a black police officer killing a black man, we wouldn't scream racism. And regardless, it's the loss of a precious life. And I think they use the word racism because they know that it's like, you know, throwing fuel on a fire. And it stirs up hate and division amongst us. And then we're just right, you know, we're easy pickings for somebody to come in and take over because we're fighting amongst ourselves. We're doing the devil's work for him.
Tracy, I couldn't agree more. But look, let's face it. I've said this before, and I think it bears reiterating right here. You know, Marxism doesn't work as well in America on a class warfare basis because so many of us start at one place in life and end up in another place in life. Our children go off to school or they start businesses. And you know, people start poor and end up rich all the time in America, or they start poor and they end up middle class or affluent. But race, you can just continue to use that even when people are successful. Oprah Winfrey can be a victim, and Barack Obama can be a victim, and LeBron James can be a victim, even though they're fabulously wealthy and famous. It's American Marxism. Back in a moment.
The things that I hoped for, the things that I dreamed, the plans that my husband and I had, pretty much in every way they fell apart.
Sometimes life doesn't turn out the way you planned. Sarah Hagerty on Focus on the Family Minute recalling a time when she really struggled and how she grew closer to God through that.
And multiple times when we thought this could not get any worse, the next day something terrible happened. Everything I want for my life feels like it's sand in my hands. I have it for a second and then it's gone. And it was in that time that I really started to feel the invitation of God to find out who he really was to the brokenhearted. And that finding him as near to the broken, first seeing myself as broken, going, my life is not working like I thought. I'm not producing like I thought. I'm not feeling the success of being a Christian in this world. So who are you to me?
God is close to the brokenhearted. More at familyminute.org.
Dear 1 million moms, I've always thought that maybe your organization was making a mountain out of a molehill. But today, I cannot believe what I just saw on my TV.
Concerned about the trash flowing into your home through today's media that simply will not censor itself? Make your voice heard. If you see trash in the media, tell us. Use the Submit Trash button at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com. And thanks.
You could say the Boy to Man book is a collaboration between Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, and Brian Fisher, host of Focal Point, the home of muscular Christianity.
I've written the Boy to Man book for fathers of 12-year-old boys, drawing on the wisdom of Solomon and what he wanted his sons to know on their way to manhood.
Read the Boy to Man book together with your son and pass on the wisdom of Solomon. Order your copy today at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at afafoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
We've got a few open lines. The number is 888-589-8840. And let me say this before I go back to your calls. There is not a single American who is honest, who is perceiving life and reality accurately, whether that person is of Irish descent, Italian descent, Jewish descent, Eastern European descent, in other words, comes from Romania or Bulgaria, or of Asian descent, or of Indian descent, meaning the continent of India, or of Native American descent. There's not a single person who resides as a citizen of the United States of America who cannot say, I am better off here than I would be anywhere else in the world. There's not a single one of us, if we're honest, who can't say that. When are we going to begin to celebrate that together again, as opposed to what we see in the streets of our cities today, acting like this is the worst place in the world to live, and it's so bad that we ought to tear it down? And let's face it, that's what all of this racial conflict is about. It's about trying to implement a Marxist vision for our country. It's about wanting to destroy capitalism. You know, Black Lives Matter is imbued with a whole lot of Marxist thinking that has nothing to do with racial equity or justice or anything like that. It has to do with a Marxist vision. Somehow they think if you can create America as a collectivist nation rather than a nation of individual liberty and freedom of speech and freedom of religion and all of that, if you can get rid of all of that and create a kind of totalitarian utopia in which some overriding authority orders everybody what to do, what to say, what to think, where to work, where to go, oh, we'll make everything equal. There's only one problem. Everywhere that's been tried, it has produced a genocidal nightmare. And we're not having it here in the United States of America. Okay, the number is 888-589-8840. You've been very patient, Carol. Carol from Texas, welcome.
Yes, sir. I was thinking that maybe Drew Brees and the restaurant were threatened. They and their family or their being were threatened, and that's why they changed their minds so suddenly.
You might be right, Carol, but you know what? They should say that, because it doesn't help the rest of us for them to buckle that way and just kind of go along. They should just say that, because it'll then give other people the courage, and it'll also expose the evil on the other side. So, I mean, you could be right, but their response to that is not the right one.
true.
Okay.
Yeah. But they may have their knee on their necks and they can't do anything.
Well, that's an interesting analogy there. But thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to John in Oklahoma. John, welcome.
Good morning. God bless you. God bless you, Bishop, and God bless AFR. I love it.
Thank you.
I wanted to share something that happened this morning. I'm legally blind, so every morning my wife reads to me Facebook information. I'm born and raised in Oklahoma. She's from Kansas, and I'm a graduate of Oklahoma State University. She read a Facebook posting that is a controversy now at Oklahoma State University that there is a Murray Hall, which is a dormitory, Murray Hall. Mm-hmm. And she said there are people there at OSU that want to change the name of Murray Hall. And so she asked me, well, why? I said, I have no idea. I know that it was named after a previous governor, but I have no idea. And so I came here and asked Wikipedia and found out that it was because he was a racist enforcing Jim Crow laws in the 20s. And I told her, you know what, I bet you not even 5% of the people in Oklahoma know that. I didn't know it. My sister didn't know it. You know, people are looking for excuses to be
right.
offended.
That's exactly right. And look, we will never see an end to this when we go down that road. And I don't know this gentleman who you mentioned, and maybe in that sense, you know, he was a bad person. I don't know that he didn't have other redeeming qualities. I mean, we're hearing the same things about our founding fathers, that, you know, they were slave owners. Well, that's true. They were. Many of them were, not all, but many of them were. But they were also men of tremendous contribution to our country and to the future of humanity. You don't have to throw all of that out because they also happen to be products of their time and not know how to get out of something that they considered, all of our founding fathers came to believe that slavery was wrong, but they also did not know how to deal with it, how to get out of it. So this is a road, we keep going down this road, and it's never going to lead anywhere except to more conflict. And let me add this, it doesn't improve the life of a single individual, not one. So we appreciate the call, though. Thank you very much, John. Let's go to Ruby in Mississippi. Ruby, welcome.
Hello, how are you? I just want to let off a little bit of steam about those two girls that the TV's now showing where the police pulled them out of their car. I'm going to tell you something. Those girls were out past curfew. And if you are breaking the law, then the cops have got every right to stop you. They told them to get out of that car. They refused. How did the cops not know that that car didn't have a load of dynamite in the back of it? If it had and they had gone through, then the cops would have been blamed for that. Yes, they took them out roughly, but the girls were out past curfew. They were breaking the law, for heaven's sake. Do we pick and choose, or do we just do whatever we want and blame somebody else? I've always told my kids, cop stops you, tells you to get out. By George, you better get out.
Yeah, you know, Ruby, this is the thing. You know, I've had several people jump on me about saying, you know, I've never had a bad interaction with police officers. Some are friendlier than others, and some I really enjoyed kind of, you know, even when I've been stopped, I end up talking to the cop and we have, you know, kind of have a good old time. And then others are more businesslike and, you know, it's straight business. And I understand that. But people say, you shouldn't be saying that because, you know, you imply that nobody else has ever had a bad experience. I'll tell you one thing. If people would respond respectfully to police officers, and in a situation, a tense situation like that, the police tell you, get out of the car. You know, you just cooperate with the police officers. And I know but when you instill in people this idea, the police are out to kill you, the police are out to get you, you are setting people up for very bad consequences. And that's the garbage. You know, like Bill de Blasio, I tell my son, you know, beware of the police. Well, and look at what he's produced in his city. And if you tell people that constantly, and they're on guard, and they're afraid, and they think the police are out to get them, and then you're right, the police stop somebody, they don't know what's in your car, they don't know whether you've got a gun, they don't know whether you've got a bomb, they don't know who you are, they don't know, their lives are at stake too. And so if you just cooperate with them, and then if you feel that they behaved inappropriately, you can file a complaint. And I'll tell you something, I think these days when you file a complaint in most places against the police, it's going to be taken seriously. And then you don't have to stop there. You can file a civil rights complaint if you think that's happened, you think your civil rights have been violated. There are all kinds of things you can do. What you don't want to do is resist them and fight them and give them a hard time and make them think that you're a person who may be a danger to them. That's what you don't want to do. So, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Ruby. We've got a lot of teaching, of reteaching, really. Yesterday I mentioned deprogramming people because people have been almost like a cult. They've been programmed into thinking a certain way, and sadly that way of thinking can be very dangerous and very destructive. So thank you for the call, Ruby. Let's go to John in Mississippi. John, welcome.
Yes. I'm going to speak fast for the sake of time. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think the head of the snake on the pandemic and on the rioting and this whole thing is Bill Gates. I think he's got enough money to have a fantastic organization to get his globalization. What do you think?
Well, John, thanks for the call. I'm going to try to get another one in. I don't know whether it's Bill Gates. I do believe, however, that there are major financial forces financing the stuff that we are seeing happen in the streets of our cities. And I think that it is global. That's why you see protests in London and Australia and New Zealand, all over the world. So whether it's Bill Gates or not, that I can't speak to. I just don't know. But I do believe that there's global money involved in trying to destabilize the United States of America, especially, and try to create this sort of global government that these leftists are so committed to, a global communist government. Get one more in. Robert in Arkansas. Robert, you really do have to speak quickly, but welcome.
Thank you. First of all, Drew Brees, if you really believe what he said, he should have stood his ground and not apologized. You don't apologize for something that you really believe from your heart, something that's close to him. However, the Black Lives Matter situation, and particularly concerning Floyd, if that had been four black police officers and a white citizen was done in the same manner, it would have been a total different situation as far as the system is concerned.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. And as far as the media is concerned, too, I mean, the reaction would have been very, very different if it had gone that way. Because, see, here again, this is part of the indoctrination. First, there wouldn't have been the assumption that it was racial. And when it's a white person and a black person injured, the assumption is it's racial, even though it might not have anything to do with that. Like I said, I mean, it may be that this former officer, Chauvin, is just a bad guy, period. But we immediately jump to race. Well, that's going to do it. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. You can go to church without being concerned about being arrested in most jurisdictions. So I hope you do that. And listen, God bless each and every one of you. Thank you all so much for your prayers, your support, for listening. And remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.